WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome into the Low Tide here on 90.7 The Capstone. Nicholas, Adam, Elliot, as always, back again after another exciting and very stress-filled game against South Florida.
You know, it was definitely, you know, more stressful than I wanted it to be. You know, fourth quarter made me feel a little bit better about it. I will say it's not as bad as some other teams around the state or around the country, so I'll take the win.
Yeah. I'd like to apologize on behalf of all Alabama fans out there. That was on me. I should have just been on the field the whole time. I don't know why my credentials said I'm only allowed on there with 6 minutes left to go in the fourth. That is actually just my bad. So I'd like to apologize to everyone. We started picking it up when I was down there. I'll be sure to be there next time.
Well, there you go. That might be the answer. Other than that, and other than the eventful week, how are we doing?
You know, I'm okay. A little tired, you know, some stressful NFL action going on today. We're only in week one. At least in the NFL, you don't need to go almost undefeated to make a playoff. So, you know, I'm okay. Just I'm ready to go to bed.
Yeah, I'm feeling like Chris Boswell, feeling like money right now. Okay.
Anyway, so let's get in. Let's get into this one. Alabama gets the win 42-16 over South Florida. Do not let that score fool you. This game was extremely stressful. I want to say it was a one-score game most of the fourth.
Yeah. No, it was, until about the six-minute mark.
Yeah. So this was a stress-filled game. What do we think was the biggest area of concern for Alabama coming out of this one? I know there's a lot.
Well, for me, you know, going into the game, you know, they had two offensive linemen, starters, were not playing in the game. I know they were talking about how they were week to week. They really wanted to get them to rest until either Wisconsin and then the bye week right after. They didn't want to have to play anybody that was banged up and possibly have them more banged up before those big games coming up. But even then, you know, way too many penalties. Way too many holding calls. You know, you had the one holding call that called back the Jalen Milroe, like 80-plus yard touchdown that he had. And then you had a couple of defensive penalties that kind of extended drives for South Florida. So really need to clean up those penalties. And I do think the offensive line will get better once everybody is healthy and back in the lineup. You saw in that fourth quarter when Elijah Pritchett went back in there, Alabama scored like the next three drives after he went in. So I do think the offensive line can be better once they have the full, you know, strength there. But, you know, we saw this a lot, you know, early last year where it was the offensive line that they, you know, cleaned up as the year went on. But you definitely don't want to see it, especially with some big games coming up.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like one area of concern, kind of like what you said, Nick. I think there's a lot of things they can address. Honestly, I just don't think they were locked in, like, just from the get-go. And I don't think the reality really set in until it was, like, the fourth quarter, and they're like, wait a second. It's like 14-13 still. We better, like, pick it up a little bit. And then it kind of seemed like they finally kind of started cleaning up the penalty. There's, like, a lot of unforced, like, mental errors on just, it's like, so many different facets of everything. Like, bad exchanges, poor, like, holding calls, calling stuff back. And quite frankly, like, they're a little bit on the luckier side, I will say, because Byron Brown could not hit the broadside of a barn. There was at least, like, five separate times he had a wide receiver way open downfield, and he airmailed it. I mean, it just wasn't even remotely close. And if any one of those hit, like, you know, this is a very different score and a very different game at that point in time. So I don't know. Maybe they're looking forward to next week. Maybe they're looking forward a little too far in the future to Georgia. That is not going to slide against Georgia. I mean, I'm just going to be honest. That's just not going to work. So
won't slide against Wisconsin either.
I don't think it'll slide.
No, it will not. Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, it's a mix of the offensive line stuff. You know, this is a banged up offensive line. You got a lot of guys that had to move around early, but you kind of noticed, you know, unfortunately, Welcome Formbly, you know, he struggled in this game mightily. He was getting beat a lot. a lot of holding. I believe he had three penalties just on him. And almost as soon as he was subbed out, everything just started clicking. You know, it's tough. You got a lot of guys who are being forced to play positions that are, you know, spots on the line where maybe they're not as comfortable. And you'll hope that some of that kind of gets fixed, you know, with Proctor coming back hopefully next week, stuff like that. And, you know, again, just like you said, Elliot, I mean, it's a lot of, like, little mental errors. Like, when was the last time you saw an Alabama game that had three fumbles? Like, it was very, very concerning.
You know, that first one, I believe it was on, like, the opening kickoff of the second half.
Yeah, you got stripped right out of
and
there.
And then you had...
Had a great return going, too.
Which running back?
It was Jam Miller.
So Jam Miller with his fumble, we haven't really seen that. I mean, he got played a little bit. But, you know, we haven't really seen that kind of, you know, we haven't seen like that many fumbles from Alabama, like you were saying. But then that last one, it seemed like, you know, it was Jalen Milroe under center. It was like the first time we've seen him under center all year. I don't even know did we see him under center at a game last year? I think it might have been a couple, maybe. But, like, not used to being under center. We've already had the snap issues and the shotgun. You put him under center, not used to it, and get a third one. And that was, you know, right at the goal line. So, you know, you score right there, maybe things start turning around a little bit earlier. We could have possibly covered the spread if you're into that, but, you know, definitely got to work on protection.
Yeah, it was a curious decision to have Milroe under center right there, you know, especially, you know, what do you want to have available to you most in a goal-to-go situation with Jalen Milroe, one of the most talented dual-threat quarterbacks in the country? Like, you know,
space.
Exactly, and you got him up under center. Questionable decision, but you know what were some things that we could take away from this game, like some positives, you know, because I know that like it was a tough watch. It was very stressful up until the end of this one, really, until Alabama started exploding on offense and kind of showed you exactly who we thought they were going into this game. But was there anything good that we can take from this?
Defense. That's just really, really comes down to. I mean, this game was close because of the defense, and I'm not going to comment on the missed passes. That's not relevant. But more of the function of, you know, you cough up the ball three times. Not only did they fumble it three times, these were all in the second half. This is not like this was spread out over the whole game. This was all like third quarter, early fourth quarter nonsense that was going on. But especially the opening kickoff fumble and then the Jam Miller fumble. Those both gave USF a really short field. And they were pretty limited in the amount of points that they could get off of turnovers. And so I think for that bend don't break mentality is super important, especially like if the offense puts you in a bad spot, you know, limit the damage. And they did. I think they really only gave up the one touchdown off of the Jam Miller fumble, but I think that also got extended because of like a bad penalty that was taken. So it could have easily been a field goal. They forced also USF to kick a lot of field goals, and like one of them was well short, the 53-yarder. But I'm just going to say the defense as a whole.
Yeah, I agree with you, Elliot. You know, the defense, they gave up, you know, three made field goals and then the one touchdown. But, you know, if they're not able to keep holding that USF offense and Alabama gets into the fourth quarter, possibly – losing instead of up by one going in, could have been a totally different outcome. They could be talking about us like they're talking about like Notre Dame, you know, losing to Northern Illinois and stuff, which you didn't want, especially when five of the last six Alabama head coaches have lost to a group of five team in their first year. Kalen DeBoer will not do that because that was the last group of five opponent. So got out of there. And also kind of what I said earlier, with that offensive line, it was bad the whole time, but as soon as Elijah Pritchett went in, he was, you know, banged up coming into this week. As soon as he went in, three drives, three touchdowns, you know, the Ryan Williams 43-yard pass, and then the two rushing touchdowns between Jam Miller and Justice Haynes, I believe, going behind Pritchett. So it kind of – if for people that are paying attention, like if you saw, like, okay, they made the change, they put in Elijah Pritchett in the game, and then that's when – the offense started clicking. So maybe once you have him and then Caden Proctor, like we were talking about earlier, it's going to look a lot different than what it did for the first, you know, 95% of this game.
Yeah, you know, it's so tough, right? Because this whole game is just plagued with little things that you don't want to see if you're an Alabama fan. A lot of memories of the past few years, tons of penalties, fumbles, drop snaps, stuff like that that you don't want to see. But one thing that you love to see that you haven't seen from Alabama in quite some time is how they're really targeting Ryan Williams in this offense. I mean, 7 targets for a guy who is 17 years old. They were repeatedly trying to get him the ball. And, you know, on the touchdown where he had, catches that one, kind of a, you know, mid-ish yardage route, makes a great move and gets up the field. It shows you his speed. So you love to see that. And you love to see the fact that, you know, they didn't quit, right? Last year in that USF game, it was, I would say that last year's game was way more stressful than this year's game. At the very least, if you can take nothing else from this game, you look at the final score, you say 42-16. Offense showed you that they could come alive when it mattered. Now, should it have even gotten to that point? No. But, you know, that's where you were at the end of that game.
Yeah, it was a little rough. That one, and everything about that day was, like, so good, going from, you know, the dedication of the field, you know, for it being a South Florida game, the atmosphere was great. You know, more people there, I think, than the Western Kentucky game, just because of, you know, the special circumstances going on. And then, you know, you kind of felt it like, you know, that was probably one of the loudest I've heard it for a group of five, you know, opponent. And it's because, you know, you're fighting for your life down there. But, you know, the whole, like, Saban coming on the field at halftime, and all that, everything was amazing. And then I'm just kept looking up at the scoreboard, and I'm like, oh, why are we barely beating this team? Like, this could have been a great day. And then finally, like you were saying, finally comes alive. And, you know, if this was, I know, like, I can't even remember the final score of the USF game from last year, just because I blocked it out of memory. But, like, if this was another game, like, in South Florida, and it was going just how it went last year, you know, maybe they don't come alive. Maybe they don't end up winning, you know, almost covering the spread. But
17-3.
Yeah, 17-3. Yeah. And, you know, it was, you know, if USF had played like this last year, Alabama might lose the game.
Yeah, 100%. Are we concerned, you know, obviously South Florida shows the ability. They run for 206 yards on this defense that looked incredible in week one. Are we concerned by that?
No, I'm not. And that's because 108 of those yards came from Byron Brown. It's kind of inexplicable. Because up in the press box, you know, you can kind of see down on it. It was really bizarre to see a guy that clearly, even if he had wide open receivers, he just could not hit them for the life of him. I've seen that before, you'll see it in the NFL when, you know, sometimes when you watch your team play, quarterback that's for your team just he's just off. He's just not having a night, okay? And that was very obvious passing-wise that wasn't going to work. And I don't know, for some odd reason, he was just really able to escape sometimes. I think that is something that they will clean up. I think they'll put an emphasis on that, because if the rusher was not Byron Brown, they weren't going anywhere. He was the only person, and that's just because they just couldn't contain him for some reason, because they thought, I guess, maybe he was going to pass on him. He wasn't. I don't know. It's just really weird to see. But I'm not concerned. Unless, like, Tyler Van Dyke decides to run for 100 yards, then we might have to have a conversation about maybe you need to, like, run a QB spy or something. But,
you know, I'll bring up another good thing about the defense in this game. And, you know, like we were saying, Byron Brown, you know, he was putting up some yards rushing, passing. They only gave up 103. But really, third and fourth down defense. The defense held them to only 2 third down conversions. South Florida was 2 of 18, and then on fourth down, 0 for 2. So really stepping up obviously I would have wanted the shutout, but when it came down to it, they made the plays when they needed to. And if it got to third down, they weren't letting South Florida get past the chain.
Yeah, and I want to bring up, so, 2 things. Byron Brown, 15 for 35 for 103 yards passing in this game. That's tough. The other thing I wanted to bring up regarding the offensive line, I forgot to say this earlier. This was basically a perfect storm for South Florida. This is a team that is very blitz heavy. They love to be aggressive on defense. And you had an Alabama line that came in banged up. You've got guys playing in spots where they're not 100% comfortable, and it showed early and often. Honestly, across this game, it kind of reminded me of when Bryce Young was playing quarterback. No time to throw, you know, having to kind of play hero ball to stay in this one. And then, obviously, we got to talk about that shot on ESPN of Nick Saban right after Jalen Milroe runs in the long touchdown and celebrating, and then you know the penalty, you know it's coming back, and they just pan over to Nick Saban, and that just tells you the whole story right there. So it's tough. A lot of these things got to get cleaned up, especially considering next week you head to Wisconsin. That's going to be a tough battle. We're going to preview that matchup when we come back here on 90.7 The Cubs. This show is a sports production of WVUAFM 90.7, a division of student media at the University of Alabama. Support us by leaving a review, rating, or following us on X at WVUAFM Sports. Welcome back into the Low Tide here on 90.7 The Capstone. We're back talking Alabama's next matchup on the road against Wisconsin. This is going to be a tough place to play for the Tide.
Yeah, it's, you know, obviously you look at, you know, Wisconsin itself, they haven't really shown, I mean, they're 2-0, but they, you know, they've struggled in both their games. They haven't really had, you know, a really good team in a few years. But Camp Randall, it's always tough to play there. It's loud, you know, we all know about, you know, jump around. You know, it's obviously, this is their first big game of the season. If it wasn't at 11 a.m., it would probably be a little bit better, but I know some people up in Wisconsin, and they'll be ready to go. They'll get the partying started very early for that one. And, you know, it's going to be, you know, Alabama's first road game of the season, very hostile environment, and you know, it could go either way, especially if Alabama is playing the way they did this past week. So don't just expect Alabama to go in there and, you know, blow them out by 50, even though I know that's what we want. So they can, you know, we can relax a little bit after this past week. But this is going to be a very difficult first road test for the Tide.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to retweet what you said. I don't really think that there's a whole lot more to go over here. I think it's a little hard to judge Wisconsin, considering that the two opponents that they've played so far are Western Michigan and South Dakota. So, I mean, nothing like super crazy. What I will say, though, is that, and this is, I mean, again, you know, looking at the competition, but they have held, like, the other quarterback passing yard-wise to a pretty low number. Now, I'm not saying that that's like the end all be all. I mean, we saw like in the last game, like that's not necessary. That doesn't really mean a whole lot. I mean, Jalen Milroe had only thrown for 199 yards at the end of the game, and they won 42-16. So, I mean, it doesn't. That's a moot point. But what I will say is that it does seem like Wisconsin is pretty stingy when it comes to allowing teams to convert on third and fourth down. Looking at both of those games, seems like both Western Michigan and South Dakota struggled with extending drives, maybe contributed to why they lost. I don't know. I didn't watch film on those two games, nor will I probably. I don't know. I don't have the time to do that. But, you know.
We're very busy at college here.
We are very busy at college here. So, you know, it's just one of those things, kind of just looking at the box score. I know I'm a box score merchant right now. But it'll be difficult. I maintain my position from last week whenever we were predicting the whole schedule. I think that they will win this game handily. It'll probably be like a 2-3 score game.
And I mean, here's the thing. I know people say this all the time, but, you know, everybody gives Alabama their best game. Like, if Alabama's on the schedule, that's going to be who you, like, really step up. Same way with George, same way with any, like, top-level football team. You're really going to show up for those really big games. And, you know, are you going to tell me a bunch of college students, you know, playing football are going to look at that schedule and go, oh, Western Michigan, South Dakota, we got that. We got Alabama coming in week 3. That's what we're really preparing for. So they'll probably have a couple of things up their sleeve.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Currently, Alabama, 15.5 point favorite on the road. You know, you got a lot of things going for Alabama. This will be a get right game, you know, on the road. It's going to be tough. It's their first road test of the year. We have not seen this new offense on the road with the kind of pressures that come playing in a hostile environment. We'll see, especially given a couple of the unforced errors that happened this past week. You want to obviously see that offensive line be a little more healthy. You kind of hope that, you know, Proctor can go this next week. Looks like he will be able to, as far as we know. But this is a Wisconsin team. They've got Tyler Van Dyke, who played at Miami last year. If you remember that Miami team from last year, they beat A&M very early in the season, and Tyler Van Dyke played a fantastic game that early in the year. I mean,
Notre Dame beat A&M pretty early in the season this year. So.
Maybe we'll get into that one in a minute. He goes 21 for 30 for 374 yards and 5 touchdowns in that game, you know, battling Connor Wegman, say what you will. But they win that game 48-33, I believe. Was that game at Miami or on the road? Let's see. Okay, it was in Miami. But they dueled with Florida State there in November 2027 game. You know, they battled with Louisville. They had a lot of very close games.
And let's not forget failing to take a knee against Georgia Tech and losing that one. But, yikes. You know, hey.
Yeah, painful. Yeah, but Tyler Van Dyke, you know, new situation for him in Wisconsin. We'll see how it goes. I mean, I'm not super worried. Are we worried?
No. As someone who has watched a lot of ACC ball, Tyler Van Dyke, not really concerning me a whole lot on this one. Talented guy. Don't get me wrong. But whenever like it is not clicking, it is a hard watch. I mean it is a hard watch. And I'm looking at his stats here. It just gave me kind of get an idea for this Wisconsin team. I do not think that Wisconsin has the explosive capabilities that Alabama does. Like, not near to the extent. I'm just comparing, you know, season leaders among the teams here. But for Van Dyke, he's thrown for 406. Milroe's thrown for 394. But Van Dyke has attempted 63 passes. Milroe has only attempted 35. So almost half the amount of attempts, okay, for Milroe, yet they're almost at the same yardage count, kind of showing very much a grinded out team, okay? Kind of more maybe a dink and dunk offense than I'm going to just throw it. Ryan Williams is down there somewhere type situation. So this may come down to clock management.
Yeah, and, you know, these first two games, you know, especially the first game, you know, Alabama just scored so fast they didn't have to worry about it. This past game, obviously the later possessions were really fast, but, you know, going into it, you know, it was pretty even. With time of possession for both teams. So Wisconsin's obviously going to want to, you know, kind of run that clock out, not give Alabama the ball as much because of how fast Alabama can score. One thing I want to see from the defense, you know, we saw it against Western Kentucky. You know, you had the two first quarter interceptions. This past game, they were not able to force any turnovers against South Florida. And so far, Tyler Van Dyke has not thrown an interception this year. He has obviously only played two games. They have been against, you know, Western Michigan and South Dakota. But last year at Miami, he did complete 65% of his passes, threw for 19 touchdowns, but also 12 interceptions. You know, he was almost 1-for-1 on the touchdown to interception ratio. So, you know, hopefully this is a game where the defense kind of steps up. Gets a couple picks, or at least one, you know, force a turnover, give the offense a short field, and then, you know, hopefully Alabama's cruising. Maybe the defense will decide to score. You know, they, you know, weren't able – you had the one long return that Sab had in the first game. You know, maybe defense shows up, scores a touchdown, kind of takes a little bit of pressure off that offense.
Yeah, okay. So kind of along those lines, let's kind of talk about what has to happen for Alabama to win this game, to be successful. to have the kind of win that would give you confidence going forward for Alabama. In my mind, number one, you got to be able to handle the noise of a tough road environment. Now, I have faith in this because you have a veteran center that came over from Washington, very experienced. Him and Milroe seem to have a pretty decent connection so far, besides that one mistake under center. I'd be surprised. We'll see if they go back to that at some point. I wouldn't advise it. That's got to go, number one. That's one of the most important things in this game for me. Second, you got to be able to run the ball. I mean, early in this game against South Florida. Yep, there we go. Early in this game against South Florida, they failed to be able to run the ball really effectively. And look, it seems pretty clear, at least to me, that the way that you beat Jalen Milroe is you blitz heavy and force him to make those short throws, those quick passes, the quick reads, force him to get the ball out of his hand. Because, I mean, they were giving him fits. There was, I believe, one play where he took, like, how many yards?
It was an 18-yard sack.
Yeah.
Now, I'm part of that. He did kind of backpedal into that. That's one of those situations where you're like, all right, man, you gotta throw that away. You cannot just keep backing up, like, looking, like, all over the place, looking for something. You just got to get out of the pocket and throw that bad boy. But to your credit on the rushing thing, I will allude to one of my live tweet updates. I think it was like it was like midway through the third quarter or something. It was right before the Jam Miller fumble. Alabama as a team was rushing for, drumroll please, 0.9 yards per attempt.
Solid.
Not even one. I mean, that absolutely cannot be the case, especially not for that long.
Yeah, and that's really surprising considering the amount of success that they had week one. You didn't think that you were going to see that. Now, eventually, they did get things going, right? I don't know. It's tough.
You know, one thing that, you know, some people have talked about with the transfer portal and, you know, some people saying, you know, that's why Nick Saban left, not being able to keep people. You know, the top-level talent really – for the most part, had stayed at Alabama until, you know, this past year when you did have, you know, Caleb Downs and Isaiah Bond, you know, when they transferred out. Usually the starters were staying. The thing is, you were losing a lot of those second and third string guys who wanted to get playing time. So that might be an issue because in this game, Alabama wasn't not able to rush as well as they did the first game and also down, you know, two starting offensive linemen. And you know, maybe they'll get better, but like right now, it just doesn't look like Alabama has the depth on the offensive line that they've had years past. So, you know, hopefully, you know, Elijah Pritchett did not get banged up any more than what he already was, so he can go. We'll see if Caden Proctor can go or if they're going to try to wait and give him this week off and the bye week before Georgia. But, you know, I really want to see who's on the offensive line starting off. And then, like we were saying, run the ball, you know, get more than 0.9 yards per carry in the third quarter. I don't want to see, you know, turnovers. I don't want to see penalties, you know, especially holding penalties that are taking away touchdowns. And then, you know, force at least one turnover. You know, that's, you know, we could say that about every game, but like, I really just want to see a clean, fundamental game and then force a turnover. That's all I want.
Yeah. I mean, Adam alluded to this earlier, but the bottom line is you got to win the turnover battle, or at least break even. At a minimum, you got to break even. Like, I think I have not run, like, a mathematical model on this, but I guarantee you if I did, the odds that you win a game by 26 points when you lose the turnover battle,
3-0,
okay, that has got to be, like, like a 2% chance. I mean, there's just that just does not happen very often. And especially against these more big-time opponents, it's not going to fly. It's just not going to work. So that's it. That's my two cents for that. That's yeah, you guys pretty much said everything else.
Yeah, 100%. I was trying to find the I want to see that chart where it kind of shows you the win percentage at certain points of the game from South Florida, because I really would have been interested to see kind of what they thought. I mean, you know, in the back of your mind, you got to say, like, it wasn't really ever a question that Alabama was going to lose a game. But man, did it get stressful, a lot of those points. And that's just something that you do not want to have against Wisconsin. You want to be able to get all the way through that game. Yeah, so I mean, it never really dipped below Alabama having, what is that, like a 70% chance, I guess.
Spikes a little bit.
Which is tough. But, you know, that's what you would expect. And you really want to see from Alabama this next week. This is a get-right game. Tough road opponent. Got to take it seriously, which I don't think is something that is going to be a problem, especially after this performance this past week. Got to take it seriously. You got to have a very solid win here. Don't give anyone any questions because, as we alluded to in the first half, there was a lot of questions about Alabama coming out of this one. When we come back, Beef of the Week, it's back again. Can I keep saying it's back? I think
you can. I mean, because technically it is coming back. It's on a weekly basis, right? So
I can't. The joke doesn't work as well anymore because Texas is actually back. But you know, it does. You know, sound reminiscent of all those years where after every win, it was, you know, Texas is back. So, you know, Beef of the Week is back. Maybe it's back for good.
Yeah. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back into the Low Tide here on 90.7 The Capstone. Nicholas, Elliot, Adam, talking all things college football. Before we get into Beef of the Week, we got to take a look at this AP poll. Just recently out, Texas up a spot to number 2, Georgia at number 1, as to be expected. Ohio State bumps down 1. Texas over Ohio State, how do we feel about that?
I think it's a moot point. It's irrelevant. I mean, 2 and 3 are like interchangeable in my opinion.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, right now I would say I would put Texas above my personally, you know, with what I've seen. I mean, Texas started off slow in that opening game, and then they went into Michigan, and I know Michigan's not the same as it was last year, but I, you know, just from the way I feel watching these games, I would say Georgia and Texas are kind of like 1 and 2 right now. Obviously, as we get later in the season, and Texas, you know, Texas doesn't have the toughest SEC schedule, but I think they will be playing a tougher schedule than what they have in the past. You know, we're week 2. You know, this will get cleared up, you know, as we go through the season.
So, okay, first off, I just want to be on the record that I think we're heavily overweighing this Michigan win Texas. I think this is very similar to Colorado TCU the year before. I think we're heavily overranking a team that, you know, albeit won the national title. This is a completely different Michigan team that doesn't even have the starting quarterback that they wish they had. It's tough. So I'll be on the record for that. If they somehow beat Georgia, that game's next week, correct? Or a week after. It doesn't matter. If they beat Georgia, I will come on here and issue an apology. But
I'm holding you to that.
I will.
But I agree with you, so I'll issue the apology as well.
I'll 100% do it. Otherwise, Alabama's still at number 4. Ole Miss, Missouri up to number 6. Look at that. Tennessee jumps 7 spots. That's a phenomenal young quarterback there in Tennessee. Penn State, Oregon drops 2 spots.
Penn State should have dropped.
34-27 Bowling Green.
I'm going to go on the record, and I'm going to say that Penn State is consistently one of the most overrated teams in college football. I do not know how they keep getting away with this. I don't understand how you can look at Oregon, drop them 2 spots, look at Penn State and not drop them as well, at least 1 spot. I don't understand that, but I digress.
Miami at 10 up 2 spots, USC up 2 spots, Utah drops 1, Oklahoma State goes up 3 after they beat Arkansas in a game that was really close. That was a tough game. Kansas State narrowly escapes with a win over Tulane. Oklahoma, LSU, Michigan drops 7 spots. Notre Dame drops 13 spots after the shout-out number 25, Northern Illinois Huskies. Take them down 16-14. That's a tough loss.
I think tough is an understatement.
Just take Notre Dame out of the top 25.
Ooh, yikes.
I would have taken him out of the top 25.
Truly, truly unfortunate. I don't really think we need to run down any more than that. Okay. Louisville, Arizona.
Bill O'Brien is Boston College at number 24.
Hey, there you go. There you go.
Patrick Mahomes
Can we even say
Jr.?
That name here?
Yeah, I don't know. But Patrick Mahomes Jr., Dylan Raiola, Nebraska.
I saw some videos on social media. It's uncomfortable. There might be another, like a Patrick Mahomes clone walking around.
I saw something where it was like, Patrick Mahomes playing on Thursday night and Saturdays might be unsustainable for the rest of the season.
That's true. Okay. Beef of the week. Who wants to start?
I started last week, so I think one of you two needs to start.
All right. I'll get. Okay. So, had a conversation earlier this week with this gentleman, Miami fan. And let me start off by saying I expect Miami to have a very good year this year. With their schedule and with who they have on this team, you know, should probably go undefeated. Right now, the rest of their season, they currently only have one ranked opponent, and that is Louisville. They will go on the road to Louisville October 19th. They have Florida State, who was preseason number 10, but, you know, they've dropped off. Georgia Tech was ranked going into this past week. They lost to Syracuse. They dropped off. You know, there might be a couple of teams that come up. But right now, currently, only one ranked opponent the rest of the season. They do have to go on the road to South Florida, so that'll be a nice, you know, opponent for them. So far, they played Florida, who had a nice bounce back against Samford. But they go into Florida, they beat Florida, A&M 56-9 this past week. So, I think Miami's going to have a good year. I also think when you're trying to make an argument about your team, you need to bring facts. And when you start off your conversation without facts, it makes me second-guess the whole conversation. So, first, once the person realized I was an Alabama fan, they started with roll and then an expletive. That starts with an S, real original. I, you know, didn't really do anything for me. I'm just like, you know, whatever. And he says, we have the best quarterback in college football. Number one Heisman candidate this year. Maybe so. Cam Ward has played well so far.
He looked nice.
He has looked nice. The very next sentence, he says, he was the Heisman runner-up last year. He did not finish in the top 10 of the Heisman voting. Jalen Milroe finished sixth. Obviously, the winner, Michael Penix, Bo Nix actually finished second. You know, he was not anywhere on the Heisman list. But according to this gentleman, he was the Heisman runner-up and says projected first-round NFL draft pick. He, you know, he got that part right. But as soon as you said he was the Heisman runner-up last season, you know. And then he also goes on to say, this is exactly why Alabama wanted him, and he chose Miami instead. To my knowledge, Alabama never reached out to Cam Ward. I don't know. If somebody has some other information on that, I don't think, obviously, Austin Mack transferred from Washington. I don't remember seeing anything that said Alabama, Kalen DeBoer reached out to Cam Ward. After that, he says he watches football every day, even the off season. You know, anyway, this guy, I then go say you beat Florida. Florida's not that good. Florida has not had, I think, a winning season since 2020. They did make the SEC championship that year, 8-4 record. Billy Napier's in his third season. I don't believe he's had a winning record any of the seasons. It doesn't really look like it to me this year, especially with how stacked the last part of the season is. He says Florida is not a bad team. They are just in a rebuilding stage. I don't care if you're in a rebuilding stage. The team is still bad. You did beat them 41-17. Good on you. The team is bad. I don't care if they're if Alabama was rebuilding, which, you know, you could argue that they are with the talent that had been lost. If Alabama then went on to have a 5-7 year, the team's bad. I don't care if it's rebuilding or not. Then he goes on to complain, you know, this is why Coach Saban left. He can't keep players anymore. No more Florida talent coming to that school. Alabama has at least one Florida player every year that commits, including Terrion Arnold was from Florida. Dallas Turner was from Florida. Anyway, he goes on to say Alabama recruited 86 Florida players in 2020.
maybe if we're spreading it out on multiple recruiting classes, I don't think any coaching staff would recruit 86 players from one state for one recruiting class, considering you only get about 20 to 25 commitments. But, you know, what do I know? And then it goes on to say, and you say Florida's a bad team. Y'all played Western Kentucky. Florida would dog walk them. I wouldn't go that far. They were kind of struggling with Samford until, like, later in the third quarter. Anyway, then he goes, you know, he just brings facts. And, you know, y'all can be the judge. I don't think he brought – I think the only fact that he brought is that Cam Ward's probably going to be up for the Heisman and he'll be possibly a first-round draft pick. But I don't think any of those are facts right now. So, I do think this guy's going to have a great year. He's going to love watching Miami win a lot of games against unranked opponents. And, you know, if they beat Louisville, Louisville's still ranked. You know, that'll give them one. So, you know, there's that. So, hopefully, he has a great year. Miami goes to the playoffs and then lose by 30 by the first real team they play.
Man.
That was a tough listen, honestly. I understand where you're coming from. You know, I get it. Yeah.
You gotta love the online arguments.
But, like, how are you going to say you just bring facts when your first thing was he was the Heisman runner-up? He did not finish in the top 10 of the Heisman voting.
Me when I lie. Source? I made it up.
I made it up. Yeah, you should have asked him for his source. Okay, I'll go next. Since, you know, Elliot, we'll go from first to last. You know, we'll keep it.
It's like a little cycle.
We'll keep it
even. Okay.
Yeah. So I wake up this morning, and the first thing I read on my phone is that
quarterback.
The Cowboys and Dak Prescott agreed to a four-year deal worth $240 million. 231 of that is guaranteed. Oh, boy. Okay, look, I've been on the record multiple times on this show that I'm a Dak Prescott hater. Okay, let's get that straight. Okay, I'm on the record for being a Dak Prescott hater. Do I think he's a solid quarterback? Yes. Can he win games during the regular season? Yes. Can he win postseason games? No. Like, definitively. When it matters, Dak Prescott is not the quarterback that he is during the regular season. I spent all day trying to think of a comp for Dak Prescott. You know, obviously in the NFL, probably Romo. Very similar.
I'm seeing a little bit of a trend.
You know.
It's tough. It's tough. I'm not even going to get into that part. He's like, and then I was trying to think like NBA comp. Joel Embiid, maybe.
There are many teams Carmelo in the NFL Anthony. That would have loved to have had Tony Romo and then Dak Prescott. It just happens to be that the Cowboys really want a Super Bowl that they have not seen in 30 years. And
okay, look, this is true, but like, okay, first off,
you're not impressed with him today in his performance?
Didn't he throw for like, he had one touchdown, what, 19 for 32, 179 yards against the Browns? Browns have a good defense. They were, what, number one defense coming in to the season?
Supposedly.
That we thought, and then they got 33 points dropped on them.
You want to talk about dog walked?
Yeah, that was it was tough. It was tough. Deshaun did not look good in that game.
Yeah, the dog pound, ooh. Oof.
It was tough. But look, should Dak Prescott be the most highly paid player in the history of the NFL? No. Definitively no. And if you think it's yes, I don't even know what to say to you. You have to look, you can be fantastic in the regular season, but in my opinion, it does not matter if you can't get it done in the postseason. Repeatedly, the Cowboys have had very talented teams. Fantastic defenses, you know, CD. I just can't wrap my head around this. I mean, it's unbelievable. Like, you talk, you know, a lot of people talk about how Tom Brady got lucky, right? Because he had all the good things. He had a great defense. He had a fan. He had a generational kicker. I will
say that that is true for probably his first three Super Bowls, and then after that, Tom Brady became one of the best quarterbacks, but. You know, that was
like, I just, what more does Dak Prescott need to get over the hump in the postseason? Like, I understand that it's not all on him.
How much help does he need?
Right. The Cowboys need a lot of help in general, But the Cowboys look like they're going to have another great defense again.
I don't know, man. I think Deshaun Watson's just not that good.
Yeah, he's also trash. You want to talk about a bad deal? That's a bad 24 deal.
24 of 45 for 169. Come on now. One touchdown, two interceptions.
It was tough. I saw something that I think half of their plays went for zero or negative yards today, which is truly saying something. Look, the bottom line is this. Dak potentially and Brandon Aubrey has like a generational kicker on his hands. Okay. I do not understand how much more help they need. I don't understand why you pay $240 million for a guy that cannot win playoff games.
It's a fair argument. I can respect it.
It's tough.
And who's your backup right now?
Trey Lance.
Mm. Oh, and that might be why.
Look, I think Dak is a fine quarterback, okay? Great during the regular season. Potentially a stat patter. Well, not potentially. Confirmed a stat patter.
Do we know how true it was when allegedly San Francisco was looking to trade Brock Purdy? Because, you know, maybe y'all should have looked into that one.
Why? He's a game manager.
So they could pay him.
Look at how many weapons San Francisco has.
He's went farther than Dak Prescott.
That's not saying much. The bar is in hell. You know what? You go ahead, Elliot. I've had about enough of Dak Prescott today.
Okay. You know, I'm trying to enjoy my NFL viewing experience, okay? And look.
Did you pay $355 for NFL Red Zone plus Sunday ticket?
No, I did not.
Or it's Sunday ticket plus Red
Zone. I only paid $110.
Oh, wow.
Student package.
Student deal. Okay.
Hell yeah. But you know, I'm sitting here and I'm watching my team, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Okay, Mr. Unlimited is out because his calf hurts. Okay, so we're starting Justin Fields, and I'm like, you know what? You know this could be good. Okay, and in every positive play that the Steelers made, those darn Atlanta referees thought for some odd reason that it was time to throw a flag. There were countless times, blatant. Either, like, there's the one play, Najee literally got his helmet ripped off by Jesse Bates. Jesse Bates had his whole fist inside of Najee's helmet and ripped it off in front of the ref, and the ref went, oh, I didn't see that, okay? And then George Pickens, he grazes A.J. Terrell's forearm, okay? And they're like, that's an OPI after he catches it for, like, 6 yards. They're like, oh, wait, Justin Fields is throwing it downfield now? Oh, wait, we can't let that happen. Big Kirko stays dripping around here. Big Kirko sucks. That's what he does. Chris Boswell owns you.
Wow. I don't even know that I can get that passionate about how trash Dak Prescott is.
Well, see, at least with how trash you think Dak Prescott is, at least they can put the ball in the end zone.
That's true.
To be fair, the Steelers should have had 21. I have another beef, okay?
I don't even remember the last time Pittsburgh scored a touchdown.
Okay. You know what? I do have another beef. Because you know what? We play conservatively all game long, and then you have a chance to go up 8. To go up 8 to make it 18-10. And what do? You go for it on 4th-and-1, and he, like, loses a yard. He, like, falls. He slips. It's like slipping on some Mario Kart banana peel, okay? It's like out of a comedy show. They should have had 21 points. And you know what's even worse? To add insult to injury, my roommate loves Scott Hansen, and he puts on Scott Hansen. Let's watch Red Zone. Let's go through all the touchdowns for today. Guess who's not going to be on there, okay? Yo, actually, they were on there because they gave up a touchdown to Kyle Pitts.
Okay, wow. I'm done. Okay, deep breath. Deep breath.
I'm done. Go Steelers.
Before we go, I'll say one nice thing about Dak Prescott. Okay. The first throw that he had, first touchdown of the game to Brandon Cooks, that was a nice throw. The blitz is coming. It was a perfect ball. But we got to remember, it is week one of the NFL season. I don't expect this to continue into the playoffs if they make the playoffs at all. Anybody else got anything else they need to get off their chest? That was a hell of a rant.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's just a lot of passion.
Today was rough. You know, we're covering from the Alabama game last night, trying to find enjoyment watching the NFL, and you know, I'm watching the Steelers game just like Elliot, and it's just like it's tough to watch.
Boswell brought me joy.
It's tough to watch. And then the one thing I will say, you know, Caleb Williams, the number one pick last year, he did come away with a win in his first game.
You know, that sure was one of the games of all time.
They beat the Tennessee Titans, and he went 14 of 29 for 93 yards.
Kenny Pickett stat line.
Rome Odunze, one catch, 11 yards. So, you know, maybe they'll get better as the season rolls around, but you know Chicago's probably thinking they're going to the Super Bowl because, you know, their number one pick quarterback almost threw for 100 yards, and they won a game.
And I got to mention one other guy since we talked about him so much last year, Bo Nix. Okay, let's talk about this game. Okay, here is the full list of every quarterback who has thrown 42 or more attempts with 138 or fewer yards in NFL history. Bo Nix, do you know who the other one is? There's two more. One of them's Jesse Palmer. Do you know who the third is?
Is it recent?
Yeah.
Please tell
me. What were the names you said again?
Please tell me something.
Bo Nix and Jesse Palmer.
Oh, gosh.
There's one more.
Is it an Alabama quarterback?
No.
Okay, thank you. Gosh.
But both of you are going to say this is extremely obvious. It's Ben Roethlisberger.
I hate you so much.
In one of his, like, last seasons.
Look. He was hurt the last couple of years, okay?
Captioned it, nearly 40-year-old Ben Roethlisberger.
We trotted his corpse out, and guess what? They still scored touchdowns.
Look, go back. But I want to...
But okay, hold on. Before we get off Bo Nix, the spin move was nice.
Yeah, it was good.
That's
good.
All I'll say. That was
good.
But right. Other than that, it was
to defend, if I can get this thing to actually load.
To defend Big Ben.
I'm going to defend him. Now, let's see. I believe it was.
Are you looking for the more recent Super Bowl he has in the Dallas Cowboys?
So, 2018, his last full healthy season. After this, you know, he has the shoulder injury. He also comes back. They start 11-0 in 2020. Anyway, 2018, last full healthy season, he threw for 5,254 yards.
Is that Carolina score? Is that the one, that Thursday night game where they debuted the color rush uniforms?
Oh, yeah. That
was a good
sure
one. They torched Mariota.
But, yeah, so.
Speaking of legendary Oregon court.
it's a circle. Time is a flat circle.
Oh. Anything else? I mean, I think that's
all
pretty
right,
much.
I will correct myself. I read the wrong one, but it was 5,129 yards. Close. Okay. So still over 5,000 yards. Oh, that was...
Man.
Hey,
that should have been the year.
If you're looking for a quarterback, I hear Kenny Pickett might be available.
Kitten mittens? That's tough.
Look.
He has small hands. It's not his fault.
You just have to get the Whopper Jr., and then your hands look normal size, okay?
Okay, all right. I'm
using that as a quote from.
All right, I'm cutting this off before it gets any worse. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to Low Tide here on 90.7 The Capstone. We will see you next Sunday. Thank you for listening.